is the Amp Hour Podcast, recorded February 15th, 2011. Episode 30, Funding Fusion is Not Futile.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Gamble from Chris Gamble's Analog Life.
You're back, Chris.
I am. I'm back and back to action. And thanks to Jeff for participating last week. That was a really good episode.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Jeff. Yeah, at the last minute again, as usual.
Oh, yeah. He's good for that. Yeah.
Stepped up to the plate for the third time. So yeah. we'll have to add him as like an official. Actually, I think I did. I think in the About page for Workbench of the Week, I think I put occasionally joined by.
Oh, good. Good.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was excellent. Thanks, Jeff. How was it actually listening to the show?
That was a little different. I was actually listening in the car too, like I know some people do, and yep. I was driving back, and it was great. I mean, it was a lot of fun to listen to. I mean, granted, I had a little more skin in the game because I was like waiting to hear my name, my big ego inflated, right? I'm
right.
Like, wait, why are they mentioning me? Oh, I feel so left out. Oh, there we go. Okay.
Right. Yeah. After 2 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Because I've listened to two of them now with guys, and yeah, it's just. It's kind of surreal, I don't know. It's hard to explain unless you've actually been a co-host and then not been there and listened to your own show.
Yeah. You know, it's, I was reading, I think it was a Reddit post the other day. You know, I'm on Reddit. I like Reddit a lot.
I haven't read Reddit for a while now. I was kind of into it for a while. Is that dying off or is that just me?
No, I think it's just you.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. But there was this post on there, and it was interesting, just kind of related there. Like, it was like things that people should know. And one of the top ones is people don't talk about you as often as they think they do. You know, like
right.
Just in general, you know, like it's just a pretty common piece of knowledge that, you know, like you're not really talked about that much in general. And it's just kind of like our human perception that we think people are always talking about us or talking about our backs or whatever. And
right.
people just don't
give a shit.
Yeah, and you've mentioned that before too, right? With like, you know, like companies and stuff like that. A lot of them just don't care unless you're really doing something wrong or in their face.
So absolutely.
So I guess that's probably why it's weird, you know, because you guys were talking about me and I could hear it.
Right.
You guys
driving
said horrible
car.
Things. Yeah.
I hope you were concentrating on the road.
I was, yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. Driving from where to where?
Michigan to Cleveland.
Is that a long way? I don't know. Sorry, I don't know my U.S. geography that well.
Oh, that's okay. It's about 3 hours.
Oh, that's
Michigan,
right.
University of Michigan's a really cool campus. I really liked it there.
Hmm.
Cool program. Cool people. A lot of microbrews up there, too. Like,
God. You and your microbreweries.
I like them. You know, I like them.
Right. So, did you actually hire any young schmucks?
Nope. Just went and talked to people.
No?
It was nice,
though. Okay. I thought you were going to actually hire some young whippersnappers.
Well, eventually we might, but not right now. So
right.
We'll see what happens. It was good being up there, though. I always like going to schools and checking out campuses and stuff, though. So that's the best part.
So are the kids these days still as clueless as they ever were, or are they a bit more keyed on these days?
Man, there are some really bright kids. I mean... Like, Michigan's a good school, and there's a lot of other good schools, but, like, some of them were just blew me away. You know, like, some of them were
right.
just really, you know, and just doing cool stuff, too. Anytime someone's doing, like, you know, I master's research, that kind of stuff. You know,
yep.
like, that's just a very focused topic, and usually it's on a very focused topic, and it's advanced, obviously. You have to be advanced to be going for a master's degree.
Of course.
At least in engineering.
Well, no, I've seen some pretty freaking ordinary master's projects and master's thesis, let me tell you. Some of my own personal projects beat them. Yeah, absolutely.
Like what? What have you seen?
Oh, just, you know, things like, a data logger or something like that. You know, it's like that's their master's project. You know, because you can do a master.
Yeah.
I don't know what's like in the US, but you can do a master's by coursework or by you know, thesis project kind of thing,
or
a combination of both, or something like that. And some I've seen are pretty darn ordinary.
Yeah, I know. I guess you're right, because a project is different than the thesis. And the people I was talking to were the ones that I was really impressed by were the theses, the ones doing, you know, research and really interesting topics and stuff like that. That projects, you're right, can be a little more ordinary, but
yeah. Is it? I get the impression that it's easier to do cool shit these days. It's easier to do impressive stuff these days with the amount of resources out there in terms of development platforms and higher level stuff. I mean, we've at work, we've got an intern, you know, a work experience kid, and he's been there for like 2 weeks, and he's produced this Wi-Fi. Like he did an app for his Android phone that linked to a linked to a development board via Wi-Fi, and it actually scripted into some software and rotated some stuff on the screen in 3D. And he did all this in like 2 weeks, you know. Wow. And it's very impressive, but it's, you know, I think technology is at the level where it's so high level that you can do very impressive stuff really easy. You just sort of need an idea. And
it's more system level, right?
Kind of thing. Well, you know, yeah, there's lots of system level.
Yeah, and like utilizing libraries and stuff like that. It's kind of just building on other work. Right. Yeah. And you're right. It is more impressive from a high level view like that. I mean, or just from a user view, right?
Yep.
Because you're utilizing all this work that's out there. I mean,
yeah, exactly. Like, you know, you aren't going to go and write your own Wi-Fi wrapper or something like that, because that'd take you a couple of months just to write something like that. But because it's all out there, you can, you know, just put all these things together and have an impressive, you know, churn out 1,000 lines of code and do some impressive robot or something like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's analogies in hardware too. I mean, I could throw a micro on a board, right? I'm not going to go out and lay out all the transistors for a micro, but I get the functionality of using it. You know, I get to write software for it and all that other stuff. Whereas someone 30 years ago might have had to set up, you know, NOR gates and NAND gates and all that other stuff to you flip a bit and it does all this logic for you in hardware. So yeah, I mean, there are analogies, I think, in hardware too, but we all stand on the shoulders of giants, I suppose.
Absolutely. So, I think it's very impressive to do very easy to do an impressive project these days. Even at home, you know, you see all these hackers, you know, they're putting together a robot or a quadcopter in a week that does something really cool, you know, or using the Microsoft Kinect thing, you know. Yeah. So, but if everyone had to write that stuff from scratch, we wouldn't get anywhere. So, anyway, it's interesting.
Well, keep it up, kids. And you'll impress old people like Dave.
Right, okay, who had to do it the hard way back in his day.
Yeah, back in my day.
Oh, God. Yeah, young whippersnappers got it too easy.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, dear.
Yep.
When I was a boy. No, I better not.
No, anyway. Better not. No.
What have we got? We got workbenches of the week?
I believe so. Yeah, let's see. What do we got?
Workbench of the week.
There we go. All right.
You're getting a bit slicker there.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Nope. Oh, you had a little fragment there of another.
Damn. Sorry. I'm sorry. God. Yeah. So bad at this.
Unbelievable. Anyway, first up this week, we have a big one. We've got Jeremy Blum.
Jeremy. Yes.
Yes. Or who we've mentioned before on here. He's doing the Element 14 Arduino thing.
Yeah,
if you haven't
seen it, tutorials. Yeah, he's on 6 or 7, I think, by now.
Oh, okay, right. He's really he's screaming along there.
Yeah, and he's going to school right now too. So,
right, yes, he is, and his lab is not his home lab. Unfortunately, we don't get to see his home lab. We get to see his lab at the what is it? The
Cornell, I believe.
Cornell University, the computational synthesis lab, or something like that. Yeah. So, and it's really quite cool. It's nice. Yeah. It's just a little corner of the main lab, but that's the electronics section, because as you can tell by the name, the computational synthesis lab, they work on other stuff. And
I suppose technically this is the first workplace of the week then, isn't it?
Is it the first one?
I guess so. I mean, like the...
Awesome.
I mean, some people do work from their house. I guess, who is it, Mike?
That's right. Worked from his. Had that very impressive video of the one at home. But, And he works on, one of the projects he's working on is machine metabolism. What the hell is machine metabolism?
I have no idea.
It's got a link here.
Yeah. I didn't look at that, and now I'm kind of sad I didn't.
Biological organisms can metabolize. Break down nutrients. Yeah. Jeez. All right.
I just think about I think about a computer eating a sandwich. That's what I think about when I hear that.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I see. So, like, reusable instruments, or not instruments necessary, but technology and like,
well,
recyclable
it says,
components
yeah,
and everything.
First, we are designing and constructing a robot testbed capable of reconfiguring simple truss structures, as shown in the concept image. Yada, yada. Well, we'll have to link to it. So, they're like, it's a machine which assembles... which assembles... It's like that bot. What's the competition to the MakerBot? What's the other MakerBot one? The
Oh, the RepRap? Is that what
yes,
you mean?
Yes, yes. That one actually makes itself. The RepRap can actually make all the parts required to make another RepRap. So, it's awesome.
Ooh, the machines are coming after you.
Yeah, if you haven't heard of that one, they actually deliberately designed the RepRap. That's hard to say. The RepRap. I can't get my tongue around that. That's very difficult, so forgive me if I screw it up. They deliberately designed that using almost all parts that can actually be made by the machine itself. So it's capable of self-replicating almost, apart from the electronics to drive it, of course. But,
I think the MakerBot had a couple replacement parts that it needed that it could print out itself, too.
It could print out itself. But, but the whole idea behind the RepRap was similar to this, a machine that could assemble itself. So, that's just awesome.
Yeah,
I love it.
And creepy.
That's cool. Yep. Skynet. Skynet's coming.
It's on its way. Yeah. So he's got a picture of a toaster oven. He said he uses toaster ovens a lot in his SMT soldering, so that's pretty cool.
Everyone seems to do that. I don't know. I'm not into it.
No, yeah, I've never done that.
I just do it by hand. You know, I just sit down under the microscope.
Well, it depends what you're doing, too. I mean,
I just don't build enough boards to warrant, you know, just doing all that and trying to make a paste, a solder paste mask and all that sort of stuff. And,
Yeah, I've used one of the squirter before. You can actually squirt out solder paste onto
You can actually
pads.
Actually move around, with the hand thing and actually dispense a fixed amount of paste,
That's about as much of an art form in itself as well. I always end up using way too much and I bridge everything, so.
Yep.
Yeah, what a mess. What a mess. Mm. Anyways, what else has he got there? He's got some other drawer. Whoa, that's a lot of solder in that drawer. Yeah, so cool lab, though. I like it.
Yes, thank you very much, Jeremy.
Flex circuits, too. Nice.
Mm.
Yeah.
And second and last, we've got who we've had before. We've got Kibby.
Kibby, yeah.
If we're pronouncing it right. And he's been on Workbench of the Week before.
Yes, and this is an update.
It's an update. He actually dug out of the archives an old photo, an old print film photo for you young kids.
A what? Does not compute.
Yes, does not compute. 6x4 photo, you know.
Yeah.
Or
oh, that's way too big.
Slide or something.
3x5 probably, yeah.
Right, okay. Yeah. And it's a real grainy sort of old photo of his old... It looks like it's in a basement somewhere, I would presume. Yeah, and it's really looks like it's out of the 1930s or something. I'm sure he's not that old, but...
I think it's just the film, basically.
It's just the
lighting.
Film, the age of it. So it's... Cool. Awesome. I like it. Thank you very much, Kibby.
There was a second one on there, wasn't there? He's a picture of an old power supply he did.
Yep.
Weighed about 50 kilos, so that's pretty cool, too.
And it was using IGBTs or something like that. So.
Yeah.
Mm.
Very awesome. And there was one other workbench of the week that was not submitted, but I wanted to talk about anyways. It was a video that Jerry sent to me today, actually. It's actually Steve Liebson, so we've talked about him on this show before. You know him,
yep,
Dave.
Yep, Steve Liebson's a mate of mine. Hey, Steve.
Yeah, and he did this video with Jim Williams, who is another analog badass, basically. He does a lot of the LT app notes and stuff like that, and he does videos, too. And basically, Steve went over to his house, and they were going through how to fix an old Tech 465 oscilloscope, like one of the old analog scopes. Mm-hmm. And in the process, you get to see Jim Williams' home lab. And so I'll post the YouTube video to it, but it's pretty great. And you just kind of, I mean, you're watching Jim Williams solder, which isn't the most exciting thing. But, you know, he goes over to his pile. He's like, oh, you know, I need an electrolytic capacitor. And it pans over to this pile of junk he has. And he just picks ones out. And he's like, not electrolytic, but it'll work. You know, just like kind of seeing him in his element was pretty fun. So
Yeah. It's awesome. I love that. But what I loved the most about that was actually the beginning of the video where in his home, up on the wall, is this massive array. He's got it mounted on the wall, massive array of circuit boards from an old ICBM and intercontinental ballistic missile, which he actually, I don't think he actually worked on it, but he worked on it. It's actually a computer. It's actually the 4K computer, totally discrete from an ICBM, which I think is 50s or early 60s vintage or something like that. And it's just, it's just awesome. And he talks about that and, you know, how they could, you know, fly around the world on 4K of RAM. And
I know. Trying to program that into memory and everything. Good Lord.
It's awesome. And it's all discrete. Uses all transistors, you know, diode transistor logic, you know. And, and he goes like, well, here's a flip-flop and it's like a whole board, you know. It's like...
That's like in your favorite movie in Back to the Future when Doc rebuilds the transistor out of vacuum tubes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's like, and he mounts it on the hood of the car. You know, I always love that one.
It's great. Speaking of which, I'm playing the new Back to the Future game at the moment. It's awesome.
The new game? What do you mean?
Yeah, it's a new game. It's a new video game.
You play video games?
Well, not really much anymore, but this is the Back to the Future video game.
Is it like online or what?
Sorry?
Is it online or what is it?
No. You actually buy it and you download it and it actually runs on your PC. It's like a, you know, it's like a proper game. And it's like a 4 or 5 part thing. So you get one part each month. So they actually, and it's great. Yeah, if you're a fan of Back to the Future, you have to get it because it's a whole new storyline, a whole new story arc. So based on the movie, and they got the original producer.
You read fan fiction too, don't you, Dave?
But anyway, it's great.
Yeah, you write it, don't you? That's what it really is.
Yeah, right.
And then me and Marty went and hung out at the 50s diner.
Oh, dearity. Anyway, it's very cool.
Yes. Wow.
Sorry.
So thanks to all those workbench of the week. Those are great little diversion into our nerddom. But yeah, that's there's some good ones. So thanks, Jeremy and Kibby.
Speaking of Jim Williams and all those crusty old analog guys, there's an analog convention. Well, like an analog get together coming up.
Yeah,
tell us about that one.
So that's this weekend. I think that's this weekend. And actually, Paul Rako's he's the writer for EDN.com, and so he knows all these guys. You know, they're all kind of connected out there in the California way, and. And I think I was talking to Jerry, and she's going down to it to meet some people. But last year they got like 80 people, and they have pictures of it. You know, like Bob Peace is there, and
Jim Williams is there as well, and all the you know
Bob Dobkin's the one of the founders of LT. He was there, you know, like so. Just like some really big names were there, and you know, just some. You know, there's going to be some great stories from that. So
yeah, well, Paul actually on the website for it in his blog column, he's actually got an interesting story from last year. He was talking about how, there were two guys talking and one got to talking about how great the 741 op amp was, you know, and all that sort of stuff, as you do. And I forget who was talking to who, but anyway, the guy he was talking to said, hang on, and he turned around and he tapped somebody on the shoulder and there's the designer of the 741 op amp just, standing right next to them. And that's the guy was blown away.
I know. It's awesome. Can you imagine that? That's crazy.
That's very cool.
Well, I guess that's the downside of living in the Midwest and or a different continent.
Well, it's only a plane trip away. What are you waiting for?
About $500 bucks in my pocket.
Yeah, but that's why they pay you the big bucks.
Who's paying me these big bucks?
Come on, everyone in engineering earns the big bucks, don't they?
Oh yeah, big bucks. Yeah, right.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Well, speaking of people that don't pay big bucks, I'd like to give a little rant real quick.
Rant away.
Rant. Oh, that was a horrible sound effect. I know it.
It's pretty bad.
Yeah. Anyways, TI, Texas Instruments, they have this thing where you can upload your own videos to their E2E. That's the number two. that that's their engineering community. And so they're telling us, they're saying to me and you, Dave, that we can go and we can have the privilege of uploading a video using a Texas Instruments part. And not only can we showcase the fact that we had the privilege of using a TI part, we also can give up every right to that video so they can reproduce it in any manner that they want to. It is unbelievable. I was reading this thing and I'm like, who do you think? I mean, I know you're Texas Instruments. That's cool. Great job, guys. You make some cool parts. I give you that. But like, seriously, you want me to give you free videos just because I had the benefit of paying for your parts? No, no thanks. I'll pass.
Welcome to the world of big corporate social media data.
I just don't get it.
Gathering, you know.
I just don't get it. I didn't even bother to look if anyone's done it. But like,
right.
I mean, we've made fun of videos. Like, they make some bad videos on their own. And
yep.
You know, like, it's why do they do this? I don't get it.
Because they want free content for their site. Every company out there wants to build up a, you know, an engineering community site, and they have no idea how to do it. And that's their way of getting content in. I can't remember. I was going to put it in the list here. That reminds me. Somebody posted it possibly on the forum. Mm-hmm. Now, it may have been... No, it wasn't TI, but one of the microcontroller companies out there, they've got this kind of like well, it's not a contest, but if you actually submit a video of you destroying another competitor's dev board, then they will give you one of their dev boards for free. And you've got to submit the video, put it online, and sort of, you know, explain how it's shit or something, and you want to destroy their tool, and how wonderful this other company's products are, and please give me a free tool. And
really?
And they want you to upload a video of you destroying this tool. And the terms and conditions are very similar to the TI one. It's like, you know, well, we might... And it's not even guaranteed. So you go to the trouble of making a video, destroying your thing, and they don't even guarantee to put it up. It's like, well, if we find it suitable if it meets all our terms and conditions, then we will give you the honor of having it up on our website, you know, and we'll give you a free dev board. It's ridiculous.
I could just imagine, like, busting up a dev board and then being like, all right, so where's mine? They're like, nuh-uh. And then,
sorry, you... didn't do something such
so
and
they
such.
Wouldn't send you one, you're saying, if
it wasn't approved or something. If you didn't meet the terms and conditions, they weren't going to send you a free dev board.
That's just a horrible idea in the first place. I mean,
it's just shit. It really is.
I mean, that's a good way to start nice battles with other companies, you know, like, why would you do that?
I don't know. I can understand from their point of view, you want to beat up the competition and all that sort of stuff, but it's a similar thing to what you were talking about with TI, you know? They just want... Everyone wants free content, and they know that the geeks out there are going to give it to them, you know? Well, at least some of them will. Some of them will be dumb enough to go, oh, wow, I can be on the TI website, and, my video is going to be viewed by 50 people, woohoo!
Yeah, you know? Put it on YouTube, make fun of the company. Yeah,
put it on YouTube, put some key search terms in there, and you'll get your 50 hits, you know?
Yeah, you'll get your 50 hits, and you could say whatever you want to.
Exactly.
You could break your dev board after you make fun of it, you know?
But I know. It's nuts. Don't get me started. And all these companies trying to get free content. How many times have we mentioned that on the Amp Hour?
Oh, this has
got
to be at least the fifth time, if not more.
It has to be. It's crazy. Yeah. All these, don't fall for it, people. All these companies are trying to steal your content.
I know.
And we're starting to see it. It's not worth selling out for a bloody multimeter or a dev board.
I know. And we're seeing it, too, with the 555 contest. You know, like... We're doing this because it's fun, and we're hoping people
There's
no
ulterior
right?
motive. Yeah,
but like already we're seeing, you know, like everybody's trying to get in on it, and it's okay because like a lot of it is spreading the word. But I I know that you already told me this is going to happen.
Right,
I know it. But you know, like we just wonder where it's going to go. You know, like if you know, it's like everybody's going to grab the same videos of someone else's hard work. You know, like I don't know. We'll see where it goes, but. Okay. I just hope it doesn't get blown out of proportion.
Well, how do people submit videos? Do they send you the video and you'll host it, or do they have to embed their own YouTube?
No, it's YouTube. You know, it's going to be their own video. Okay. You know, like if you make a 555 thing and it's yours, you know, we don't want it. We just want to give you a prize if it's cool. So, I mean, from that perspective, yeah, it's all your stuff if you make something. So we wanted to make sure that it stayed like that, where everybody keeps their own stuff, but that's not going to stop people. You know, it's out in the public, so anyone can
link
to it, really.
Right, so you don't think it's going to stop other unnamed engineering websites from stealing the content and going, hey, look at these cool videos.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, you know, on one side it's good because it spreads the word. On the other side, it's like, well, come on, guys. Yeah,
I know.
Anywho,
anyway, can we talk? Big companies out there, buy a clue. I'll send you a dollar and you can buy a clue, okay?
Ooh, that was saucy.
Just send me your PayPal address and I'll send you the money.
Yep.
A dollar should do it.
Could I ask one more thing about 555? I know it.
I've got something cool about the 555 too, but go for it.
Okay. So what do you think about crowdsourcing the... I had asked on Twitter today, but I wanted to get a little wider swath. Do you think it's a good idea to have everybody vote?
For all the categories?
All except the best in show. So that would be still with judges.
The best in show would be hands, would it?
And Forrest. Yeah, hands, cameras.
And Forrest, right. Okay, yeah. So you're thinking all the categories except the ultimate winner.
Except the top, yeah.
Right, except the ultimate winner. Well, yeah, I don't know. It's open to manipulation. That's one thing. Because then you'll get people who... enter, you know, on 20 different machines with 20 different email addresses just to bump up their own count so they go up. Yeah. I don't know. You have to be careful there. Lord knows I've won contests before that are like this, and it's pretty easy to manipulate the count. So,
gotcha.
Yeah.
All right. Well, maybe we'll get like a committee going or something, you know, like a bunch of people that want to vote.
Yeah. Even if you put in place the mechanisms to like track IP addresses and, you know, ban stuff like that, you know, and or in individual machines, one contest entered, it would actually get the ID off your machine and wouldn't somehow and, you know, wouldn't let you vote twice. But then you get people going around to every machine in their company after everyone's gone home and, you know, and voting that way. So,
I have no chance of doing anything that sophisticated to start with, so that might just blow the idea out of the water right there, because I couldn't even start to figure out people's
IP addresses.
Right, to actually
code something like that. Yeah, I don't know. There's websites out there that allow you to do it. Yeah. Anyway, speaking of the 555, I have to get this name right. It's difficult. Feridun Yerdedback. Oh, God.
Whoa.
No,
that's an awesome
name. I've screwed that up totally. Anyway, I don't know where he's from, but he sent me a photo of his 555 timer chip that he dug out of the archives.
Oh,
and
nice.
It's exactly the same as mine. It must be from the same batch. Yeah, you know how the other week I posted my photo of the one I accidentally blew up. Oops.
Right.
Yeah, it's exactly the same chip with the same date code, everything. It looks identical. Wow. It's amazing. The coincidence of... You know, this chip is, what, over 30 years old or something? No, what is it, a 1970...
It's 41.
1976. There you go.
76?
Yep, so that's 34 years old, is it?
Older than that. 71, I think.
No, but this actual chip is 76.
Oh, yours, I get it. Okay,
And his one, it's branded 1976. So it's like 34 years old. So the odds of 34 years later... me, I'm the host of the Amp Hour, someone who watches the Amp Hour has exactly the same chip from the same week.
Yeah. That's pretty crazy.
I'll have to post a photo of it. It's awesome.
Yeah.
What a coincidence. That's, unbelievable.
I mean, you wonder because maybe there was fewer being made back then, as a total volume amount, so maybe they made them in bigger batches, or maybe they just made batches and they sat there for a while, too.
Possibly, but the odds of... Somebody having exactly the same device in their archives is just, that's spooky. Is there any spooky music?
Nope. Sorry.
No. Okay.
Just worthless music played at the wrong time.
Right. Well done.
Yes.
All right. Anyway, I just had to mention that. Very cool.
Yeah, that's great. That's really cool.
Mm.
What else we got here? We got tons of things. I'll let you pick. How about we talk about your video? That was a cool teardown today.
Yeah, I did a teardown. If anyone hasn't seen it, the new Agilent scopes, which came out yesterday or today, depending on which time zone you're in, I guess.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, they're new low-end scopes. And I won't go too much into the scopes and how I think they're brilliant and all that sort of stuff. But, there's a few quirks to them and things like that. And I don't think their pricing's as competitive as it could be and yada, yada, yada. But the big news is that Agilent are now designing and manufacturing these low-end scopes in-house. So Everyone knows that they used to rebadge the Rigol ones, right? And right. I don't know if that was a success or failure for them. I guess it was a failure. They've gone back in-house, right? So I was just wondering if that's going to start a trend of especially the big American companies. They've, for a decade now, they've been outsourcing everything. And now they might start, are they starting to realize, oops, China's getting a bit expensive now. Yeah. And the technology is so advanced in this scope that these other small pissant companies like Rigol, even though they're the third biggest scope, or fourth biggest in the world or something like that, in terms of technology, I think, they can't do. They don't have the technology and the R&D to do the kind of ASIC chips which go into these new scopes. So, really, and that's what it's enabled the low cost. Because once you've put in the R&D funding to do that chip, you can churn out the chip like it's nothing,
Right.
Costs, a few bucks to churn out this advanced chip, which makes one of the most advanced low-end scopes in the world. So, I don't know.
What?
Is it?
I don't know either. I hope that's, stuff comes back. There. But, yeah. I think interesting question, too, is if, there was a big movement with that, in the 80s or whatever, when Japan started on the rise, right? There was, Buy American.
That's right.
In the U.S., there was a big push for it as, a nationalistic kind of thing. Mm. Not that I was buying anything or even born for part of it. But does that actually affect anyone's decisions? Now, maybe based on the quality of the product, but the... I don't think the people would really care from a buying perspective.
Most people don't know. The majority don't, and that's what companies rely on. The big companies, regardless of whether or not it's tech gear like this or it's food or something like that that you're getting from overseas. You rely on the fact that Joe Public on average does not give a shit.
Yeah.
And it's sad.
I guess so. I mean, I don't know. I've been conditioned that, price is the thing, you got to pay for quality, right?
Yeah.
And usually that's the two balancing points for me is if I'm buying something that is low cost, I'm probably going to expect it to be lower quality, but there's always a balancing point between the two. So I don't know. And the other weird thing, I hate to say it, is that the quality isn't always better. Yes, there is more quality in the U.S. sometimes, but not always.
No. Exactly.
Just seeing a stamp that says
made in Australia.
Just because it says made in the USA or made in Australia doesn't guarantee anything other than the fact that it was made, that it was helping a local economy. So
exactly.
I don't think it really drives many people's buying decisions, but as an engineer, I think that's a good thing. I think it's a great thing, really.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, no, yeah, I think you should buy the best quality. It's good to keep it in the country. I'm a huge, especially with food. I will not touch any food that's not made in Australia. Well, made, that's not growing.
Look, I made
in
a cow.
Australia. It's an artificial cow, genetically modified, assembled by MakerBot. Yeah.
Well, there's that story about the growing the meat in the lab, so you never know, man.
Oh,
you
great, can, yeah.
Yeah, mm. yeah. Delicious.
Let's not go there. Don't get me started on genetically modified.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, I just will not. I'll go out of my way to avoid food that's from overseas, unless it's like a Swiss chocolate or something like that, which is fine. Some special thing I'll have occasionally. But, if you can't do your own food in your own country, then you're pretty much screwed. So... Right. But whereas technology is a different thing, it's not like we can manufacture our own silicon here and, do our own parts. The best we can hope for is manufacture at the macro level. So
no, you can though. I mean, that's the thing. I think that's kind of, I mean, You're talking Australia.
We can't. Not in Australia, because we don't have the market for it. It doesn't, you know, you can't set up a billion-dollar fab here in Australia and manufacture. Well, you'd be stupid. You'd be bankrupt tomorrow, you know?
Maybe, but and you could. I mean, it's not like you can't.
Of course you could, but it's not going to happen, right? So, you know, you can't manufacture all your capacitors here, all your chips, all your resistors, everything, you know? The best you can hope for is to use foreign parts and, you know, maybe manufacture the PCB here and assemble here and use a few parts from here.
Well, you used to do that, though. I mean, that's what Carl's documentary is about, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. We used to manufacture transformers here, capacitors, you know, all sorts of... Yeah, this was back in the old day when, you actually, you know, they wound capacitors, you know, they... We're all operated by hand and stuff like that. So,
but it's just this gradual thing. You know, you keep saying, oh, well, we can't do this here. All this stuff's moving over. And then eventually, you're right, it won't come back. So,
yeah, well, you know, we used to assemble TVs here, all that sort of stuff. But, yeah, I'm talking the average electronic product and things like that. Yeah. We just can't compete anymore. It's just, you know, it's just not viable, unfortunately.
How do we get talking about this?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, American or Australian made stuff, right?
And interestingly, you've got another point here in the list about science funding in America. Yeah. And it really ties into that because, Obama's cut in all sorts of stuff. What's he cut in? You know, healthcare, energy, science, you know, law enforcement, and education, right?
No, not that. So that's what people want him to cut more, but right now in the U.S. so there's budget stuff coming down and basically the idea is Obama is actually elevating science, which is awesome, but that's kind of so that's good, but like basically everybody else is saying and they want to cut it, and that's kind of my point to it today, is that like that's a bad thing.
It's bad to cut science, yes. It's very bad. And they want to propose, well, cutting other stuff, you know, environment protection and health and, you know, all sorts of other shit, which is just crazy. And the one you never hear is to cut the military, and that's where your big freaking spending is. And they never cut it. It's ridiculous, but don't get me started anyway.
Right. Well, it wasn't meant to be a political argument. Mostly, though, that just basically science is in trouble, and science and engineering by extension.
Mm.
And, hopefully it doesn't take, but you know, like people always say, oh, well, it's not going to be that big a deal if you cut science. Well, yeah, not right now, but you know, give it a couple of years when you don't have any new inventions coming down the pipeline and you don't have any engineering efforts based on that.
Yeah.
And that's actually another link I have here is of a video of that I saw on Reddit today was of Neil deGrasse Tyson, who's
one of my heroes.
He's so awesome. And he's from Nova. He's from Nova on PBS, or I guess that airs a couple of places. But Nova is a public programming thing, at least in the U.S. And he talks about astrophysicists and stuff like that. But he's on this video talking about, you know, people come to science and they say, oh, well, what is science going to do for me today? You know, we need to make budget decisions today.
Oh, God.
And he says, you can't look at it like that. You know, like when Einstein was doing like emissivity equations and stuff like that. No one knew or had any idea that a few, you know, like 20 years later, that lasers would start to be a big thing.
That'd lead to solar cells. His Nobel Prize was basically for the research which started solar cells, pretty much.
Right, exactly. And another one was nuclear spin measurement. Was another astrophysicist. Yeah. So this is stuff that he's close to, right? And that's what MRIs are based on. Basically, they didn't know that you'd be able to look inside bodies without cutting them open, you know, by measuring this stuff. And so, like, science funding today actually has a very, very big effect on, like, a more global ecosystem of research dollars and dollars in general. So, I don't know. He had a good quote about, like, basically, science isn't about what it can do today. It's about understanding the universe, and he said something about having like a tool belt of all these different, you know, pieces of knowledge about the universe and your surroundings, and then later you can piece those together and make really useful stuff, and that's why it's important. So
absolutely,
I just hope
he's an awesome guy.
He is, he's a really good advocate for science, and I hope to be more like him, and I know I'm sure you do too. And
I've actually seen him. He was on the Big Bang Theory episode. He's special guest.
That's right.
The one I actually sat in on. So
yeah,
that's awesome. Didn't get to meet him afterwards though. It was a shame. So
yeah.
Ah, well.
Yes. Yeah. Not so to worry. If people have never seen any of his stuff, he has some great videos on YouTube. A lot of it's already up there.
Tons on
easy
YouTube.
To watch,
yeah,
so.
I sit there all day watching his videos. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyways, that's kind of where that all came from. But
yep.
Man, science is important, people. Not just engineering. Engineering is important too, but science is the precursor to engineering. So we need each other.
Absolutely.
We need money. We need lots of money.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. Please don't cut the budgets in those areas. God,
please.
Buy a clue. I'll send him a dollar too. Where can I send Obama a dollar to buy a clue?
1600 Pennsylvania. Yeah.
Oh
yeah,
no, but I can't send it because then it's ruined because they irradiate the mail, don't they?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, there you go.
Oh,
sorry, buddy.
God, jeez, yeah. Man. Yeah. US yeah. Nuts. Sorry.
Crazy people. Here.
Yep. Should be embarrassed.
Yeah.
I can't talk. Yeah. Our government does weird shit too.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So how about this? Did you see this Alcatel-Lucent thing? Speaking of new technology.
No, I haven't. Do tell.
Okay, so basically it's a new thing called light radio. And if I understand it correctly, and I'm not sure if I do, basically the end result is going to be that base stations and all those huge cell towers, or mobile towers, I guess it would be in Australia, right?
Yep.
They are going to shrink down to a tenth of the size or something like that.
Right.
And
but you still need an antenna of a certain size.
I'm not sure if you do though. Basically it would be like more like a mesh type network. And man, it's
so you're saying there'd be more of them.
There'd be more of them, right? And they would be able to put them anywhere basically.
Right, you know? Okay. Right. And they wouldn't need to pump out huge amounts of power like the other ones do, so they don't need massive power infrastructure and all that sort of stuff. So
yeah, exactly. Right. And so this is
still need the big poles, don't they? I mean,
they were talking about like putting them on like bridge overpasses and stuff like that. So like with a smaller network, you need less total coverage. You'd have more local coverage for like tiny spots where you'd have a little bit of coverage, and then there'd be more of those.
Yep.
So I'm not sure if it's just a jab to try and sell more chips, but
I think it could be. It's one of those things where you've got to put the infrastructure in place to actually, regardless of how big the actual device is, you've still got to put the bandwidth infrastructure in place to talk to it. So, you can't just go around and stick it under a bridge or something like that. You know, you've got to...
Right. I think they're saying that now that there's more like fiber available places and there's more, you know, even just Ethernet connections, you could try and hook into grids like that and have more local devices like that. But basically it's more of the different standards are built into it too.
Right.
So... I don't know.
So you could stick
them
inside a building or something like that, or a big shopping center or something like that, perhaps. That actually does have some infrastructure in place to do that sort of thing. Yeah.
And I mean, that's going to be a bigger thing, too. I know that, I forget they're called like nano base stations or something like that. Basically, like, they're talking about eventually having, not these guys necessarily, but having like at home base stations where it amplifies cellular signals as a broadband carrier.
Great. That's all I want is more shit pumping out in my house. Great. I've already got my Wi-Fi set to its lowest power output setting.
Really?
Yeah.
You're worried about that stuff? Are you one of those people that...
Because I can. Why not? Why would you have it pumping out at full power when it works at 10%?
I guess so. Maybe maybe you're like these people. So Nathan Bowers, the sober nude guy, he actually for a while ago he sent us a link to some crazy people that might like be like you. So
I don't know, the research just keeps getting better and better on that sort of stuff, and you hear some horror stories, and I don't know, I just don't see the point in pumping out. You know, I'm sitting right next to it, and I don't see the point in pumping out half a watt from that thing. If I can pump out 10% of that, I can go into the firmware and turn it down, and I still get coverage all around my house.
Whoa.
Hey.
I guess the site wanted to play some stuff for me.
Is this the tinfoil hat music?
Yeah, I guess it was. Yeah. Let me see if I can open that without all the tinfoil sound to it.
Right.
Basically, though, the... he sent us some... So this is Sober Newt Guy, and he sent us a link to people that think they're allergic. They have electromagnetic hypersensitivity.
Yep.
So I guess that's an... Oh, there's a... Okay, so it's a video. The electrophobes, the people who say electronics are killing them. So you're not one of them, right, Dave?
Oh, no, not at all. I don't know. I was just sitting here one day and I thought, that thing's pumping out half a watt. Why? You know, I went to the software, I turned it down to 10%. You know, why not?
This lady fled the city where she would have to, she would only leave her home wearing like a tinfoil hat, basically. I mean, like, there's probably some validity to it. You know, you can't imagine that getting blasted with electromagnetic radiation at any point is healthy. You know, if you get enough of it over enough time, you're going to get some kind of condition from it. But I don't know, like, don't go out in the sunlight either.
Because that's cell phone research and stuff. There are, you know, when you talk on your cell phone for a couple of hours a day and you've got it against your head and it's pumping out watts, you know.
Yeah.
That's serious RF, you know, actually metabolizing in your, you know, I don't know what the word is for, you know, heating up your, you know, your cell tissue and all that sort of stuff. So.
Yeah,
it's just, you know, and the research, because it's so long-term effect kind of thing, the research has only just started, and well, you know, you might as well do the precautionary principle, right?
Yeah, I would go more with the don't waste as much energy by pumping out all that energy, but I don't know about the
exactly, that was one of the things, you know.
Yeah, for you it makes sense. I'm saying that these people are kind of quacks.
Yeah, well, speaking of which, a guy at work, who is actually the head of the Australian UFO Research Association, right?
Whoa.
He's a good friend of mine, right? So he's into all that sort of stuff, right? And he was talking about quacks, right?
Quacks,
He was talking about this guy, this, I don't know, a friend of a friend or something, who he bought his new phone, right? His new iPhone or HTC or something. And the first thing he did was actually put black sticky tape over the cameras, right? And, you know, the front and back of the camera, because he was sure that the government were watching him via, had the capability to watch him via those webcams. And he just went, this guy's crazy. And this is coming from the head of the UFO Research, you know, association. And it's, there's different levels of
quackery,
of silliness, really. But I don't know. Anyway, it's funny. I thought that was a funny story. So. I don't know. Wow. And aren't there people in the US who think the government tracks them with the, you know, the strip in the money, the metal
and the money, I've heard them crazies.
And all that sort of stuff, and they
I always
don't
like
they try and extract it with tweezers or something, don't they?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I always prefer the people that try and prove them wrong and show that those people are crazy, because man, there's some
I love it. Love it. Speaking of things, stuff.
Things that people have been skeptical of a long time. Did you see? I think it was a while back. We've had this link on here for a while, I think. But in EE Times, there was a thing about cold fusion and how some Italian scientist has claimed success. That was back in late January, so January 24th.
Yes, I've had it in here for a month or so, and it always does the rounds. There's always a cold fusion, latest cold fusion experiment every year. Somebody's done one, and it makes big news. And you know, but these aren't just some, you know, basement crackpot guys. These are full on, you know, big university research stuff. So, you know. There's
good.
Something in it, but
it's
whether or not it's, you know. Exactly. But no, I think one day we will actually crack that. And I watched an awesome doco on it a couple of weeks back, actually. I can't remember the name of it. It was on one of, like a Nova type, you know, channel we were talking about, something like that. And it was basically on cold fusion research, and they got all of the big researchers in the field to give their prediction of when it's actually going to happen. And the worst case one was like 2040. And these guys are saying, you know, and they're building, you know, billion-dollar machines to do it. You know, governments are pouring in huge amounts of money into these into this research. Because if you can crack it, well, you know, it's it's
lucrative,
endless
right?
energy. And and the technology that goes into it, it's just phenomenal. But no, these are serious researchers doing, you know, working on the big physics projects, and they're all saying, you know, it'll only be 20 years from now. And
but they said that 20 years ago too.
Well, they did, but now with the benefit right? of, I mean, you know, hindsight and technology yeah. and the latest experiments, the results from the latest experiments are,
I guess
whereas
so,
back
yeah.
then it was pie in the sky because they had no results at all. But now they have actually generated the energy right. from it. And right. it's just a matter, not... actually, they generate enough energy to power an entire city or something like that just from one shot. And the whole idea, you know, because they actually do these... Most of these machines work in big shots, so they charge up these huge, you know, these huge capacitor banks, and they discharge the energy, I don't know, somehow generating the fusion thing. And the only thing stopping them making enough energy is actually the cycle rate, you know, to actually have to charge it back up and bang.
Oh, okay.
But they're getting out more energy than they put in, and, you know, it's... And, yeah, it's just a matter of cycle rate, apparently, on some of these big machines.
Mm.
You know, they can only do one shot per day, whereas they need they've done calculations, they need one shot per minute or something to make it into a usable, you know, power source that can power a city. So, anyway,
I'm still a little skeptical at this point, I have to say. I mean,
well,
like, I understand that the technology's getting there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you hear so many crap theories and crap
of course, but,
experiments and stuff, yeah. so...
But when you see this doco and you see the amount of money being poured in by governments into this research and what they're building, you know, they look like nuclear, you know, these huge nuclear, you know, experimental
yeah,
nuclear
reactors.
They are
nuclear reactors.
Well, they are, right? But,
yeah, yeah.
you know, it looks like some huge, you know, one of the, like the Large Hadron Collider kind of
oh, yeah.
big. Well, maybe not that big, but, you know, these things are huge.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so there must be something in it if they're continually pouring that money in it.
Nuclear physics, I believe, is the thing in it, and they do the equations. You know. I mean, the stuff's there, right? It's just the implementation.
Yeah, it's there. You've just got to come up with a practical method for extracting it. So I have no doubt we'll actually crack that one day, and it'll be within my lifetime, I'm sure. Is that another bet you want to take? Alongside your. Chip making machine. I say nuclear fusion will be viable within my lifetime, and you're saying a chip maker machine will be viable within.
See, now that's. I think we need to have a different timeline because, first off, you're a healthy dude, and second off,
right?
That's too nebulous. How about 20 years? What do you think? 20 years?
20 years? I think, yes. I think believe the researchers, I think 20 years we'll probably have something that's viable, possibly on a smaller scale. I don't know about powering a city scale. I don't know, but I think they're pretty close. So
I will take that bet.
All right. All right.
Do we have a prize for the chip machine bet? The chip printer? No. Do we have a prize for that?
No. Just endless bragging rights. I think that's it.
I think we should have a prize where it's like if one of us wins, the other one has to fly to the so if I lose, I have to fly to Australia. And shake your hand, just to I
right.
have to, right?
Sounds
and then you can
good.
Make fun. You can make fun of me in person, and then if right. I win, you have to fly to the U.S. You have to come to Ohio, and
awesome.
Then I can make fun of you in person. How about that?
Awesome.
All right.
Done.
Virtual deal. Virtual handshake right there.
Right.
Yeah.
But it has to meet all my terms and conditions, not just somebody does it in their basement. You know, it's got to be like.
I'm calling my lawyer. Get this in writing. Yeah. we're going to need fusion for me to be able to afford a ticket over to.
No, because I've said before, and I'll state it again, it's possible and it will happen. You'll be able to make your own chip in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
But it won't be usable and it won't be a revolution.
All right.
Like the MakerBot, which you originally compared it to and you weaseled out of.
No, I didn't weasel out of that.
You so weaseled out of that, dude.
Wait, you don't have a recording of this, do you?
I do. It's on my server, okay?
Ah, damn it.
Yes.
There goes the delete button.
That's it.
Yeah, your server. Your server, which crashes all the time. So I think
we're
going to be
able to. That's the one.
There goes the evidence.
Right. Oh, dear. Anyway, we've got 7 minutes left, and we should probably get on to some electronics. I've had... A one on the list for a while, Microchip.
Yeah, yeah.
Rebranding their regular microcontrollers and selling them as specific customized chips. So there was an article in Hackaday. Here it is that I better get the number right. Their new MCP 2200 USB to serial chip. which they advertise as, you know, on their website as just a USB to serial chip. They don't tell you that it's actually a PIC, where is it? An 18F something or other. It's an 18F 14K50 USB chip with just some firmware programmed in. That's it. You know, and I think that's great. Why not? If you can use your existing stock as a manufacturer, use your existing parts, your existing stock, and generate a new product that's already pre-programmed and it's, you know, repackaged and it's got the data sheet and it's proven and it's everything else, then I think that's an excellent thing to do.
So what would be the downside then? I don't get it.
Well, there is no downside. I just think it's awesome.
Oh. All right.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention it. I had that, you know, instead of designing a custom chip to do that, custom silicon, just reuse an existing micro they've got because the micros are so flexible and it already had the USB in there and it already had the UART in there. And and they actually release source code to do this, you know, example programs. But then, you know, if you're just designing a product, you don't want to dick around with having to, you know, program the chip yourself and get it working and test it and all that sort of stuff. You know, if you can buy it off the shelf as a totally pre-programmed, pre-tested chip, why not? It's great. Yeah,
that makes you wonder if there's like a market for like secondary people that would program the chips in between, like as a middleman, right?
There could certainly be. You can take, there's nothing stopping you taking microchips example applications, pre-programming the PIC chips and writing a data sheet and selling it on as a... Well, I'm sure, you know, I don't think there's anything stopping you
doing that. Call it the Dave Jones chip, right? You'd have to...
Well, no, why not? You can put a sticker on it and, you know, rebadge it as the, you know, the Dave 01 or something.
Well, now that would be... I would be interested to know if that's actually allowed because I don't think that they'd let that... Because I think they let it happen because it's their own company, right? So, I mean,
that's a little different. Yeah, but you can... Well, you know, you resell their chips in... individual products, there's nothing stopping you reselling programmed microchip PIC chips. There's, you know, I'm sure they don't care. They're still selling chips, right?
Yeah, that's, yeah, maybe. So, but I mean, you know, but you're changing the name on it. That's the thing that I wonder about, that they'd get in a hissy fit about.
Well, no, look, the classic example, pickaxe, right? Pickaxe is sold as a pickaxe chip, right? It's not sold as a microchip 16F, you know. Something or other. It's a regular microchip chip that's reprogrammed, and they're sold as a pickaxe. It even has its own data sheet and everything else.
Right,
so,
but again,
and I'm sure there's many examples out there, actually.
But isn't
I was going to do it myself.
Isn't that through microchip, though? I thought pickaxe is through microchip.
No, it has nothing to do with microchip at all. It's, it's a UK educational company. I forget their name.
Oh, I didn't realize. Okay.
Yeah.
I thought it started in somebody's backyard
and... It took off.
No.
No, I'm sure if I thought about it long enough, I could find heaps of examples of people doing that. But the manufacturer's actually doing that now, which is interesting. So
that is interesting.
If you have any other examples, please post them up.
Yeah.
Of other manufacturers rebadging their existing chips, repurposing them, so to speak. Yeah. And So,
you know, I was on the Savage Circuits chat last Sunday. I don't know when it was. But he has a chat sometimes, and I was on there, and one of the admins on there wanted to know if we ever talk about the propeller. And I've never worked with it. Have you ever worked with the propeller?
I haven't worked with the propeller. I've investigated it for several projects a couple of times, and I don't know. It's a great hobby chip. It's a great concept. I don't know whether I'd use it in a professional product because they don't really have the company's not that big, you know, and Parallax, and you know, if you risk using their parts in a professional product, which you might need a 5 or 10 year lifetime, and you commit to using that architecture, then you know you could be caught out. So, I think it's a tough slog for them to get into professional products, especially volume, you know, volume products that are, I don't know.
I've never used it myself. I actually got it confused with the Basic Stamp, which is another one of their parallax
parts. One of their products. But no, this is actually a chip designed from the ground up, transistor by transistor, if memory serves me correctly. They actually brag that they designed it, you know. They designed everything themselves. It's their own architecture, and it's actually a multi-core. It's got a cog system, they call it, where it, you know, they've got like eight cores, and this
you know, silicon cog switches between, I guess it's like a multiplexing type system. That's what they're getting at. And it actually switches between these cores. So you can have 8 cores doing different things, and they can all access the I/O in turn. And so it's quite a novel architecture. I really like it.
Yeah.
But, that's cool. So if you're doing, and it's got like VGA capability and stuff like that. So you can have one little processor core just handling the video, and another one handling the UART, and another one handling your processing and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Yeah. And they target robotics. So that kind of seems to fit in there pretty well too, right?
It fits in pretty well. Yeah. Because, you know, you have to, you know, you have to control 6 legs on a robot or something like that. So, you can dedicate a little core to each one, and it sort of makes sense.
Yeah, that's neat.
Yeah, I think they're pretty cool chips. They're reasonably priced. I think you can get them in quad flat pack or dip package, and they're like, you know, $10 a pop or something. Don't quote me on that. But they're reasonably priced. But yeah, great for hobby and other low volume stuff, professional. It's a bit of a risk, but
it's cool that, I mean, it's cool too that they're a small company still making their own chips. Yeah. You know, when everybody's moving to ARM and all these other cores and everything too. So the fact that they have different cores and are small manufacturer, that's pretty cool.
It's great, and it's novel. It wouldn't survive if it was just yet another, you know, single core competitor to pick, and you know, and ARM and all the other ones. It just wouldn't survive. But because it's novel enough that it's this multi-core system that handles multitasking, then
let me see if I can get this right. It's niche.
Not niche.
Niche. I say niche.
And they're what was I going to say?
I threw you off, didn't I? I'm sorry.
Yeah, she threw me off. God.
Oh, my bad.
Oh, dear. And the language, that's another disadvantage of it. The language is like some variation of BASIC or something. They've got their own language. So it's not, there's no C compiler for it.
Yeah.
So I think that's a huge downside as well. But, anyway, it seems very popular in the hobby / hacker, maker, sort of robotics kind of market. So
cool.
Good luck to them.
Anything else this week? I think we're kind of running short on time.
No, I think we're done. Our amp hour's up. We're a minute over, I'm afraid.
Did you, you didn't have any WTF stuff this week?
Oh, yes, I did. I had a...
WTF, mate.
There we go.
That sounds like WCF to me.
It's WTF.
WTF.
WTF, mate.
Oh.
I'll post the video to that again, too, if people don't understand the reference. So it's a little lewd.
Anyway, at work, they had a big delivery, and all these bags, like a big white satchel, like a, you know, like Santa would have with all his presents, you know? One of those big, right? One of these, like, huge, big mail-in satchels kind of thing with a big, you know, cable tie around the top. And they got delivered a bunch of these things, and my name was on one of them. And I went down, and what the hell is this? You know? Presents. Like, there's half a dozen of them.